Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
All coaches like point guard to pass first and get a team better, lift the team. And, you know, it's very unusual for a 19, 20-year-old kid to come into the NBA and become a factor in his first year in the NBA. But Ball has done that. He has an enthusiasm to the game. You know, Pete Maravich, Magic Johnson, I'm not going to put him in that category yet.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, he has talent.
George Karl, NBA coaching legend on the Mac Attack yesterday, weighing in. And look, I know there's only so much we can say about Charlotte right now, but I thought that was great. The conversation with George Karl yesterday, saying right there, he's not going to put LaMelo in the Magic Johnson or Pistol Pete Maravich conversation, .. yet. George Karl saying that. And again, this is a guy who you might not put him in the same category as Phil Jackson or Red Auerbach in terms of titles. Yeah, but George Karl is one of the great basketball minds and evaluators and eyes in his generation of the modern game. And saying what he said about LaMelo and the Hornets yesterday, I thought was really interesting. Not putting LaMelo in that conversation .. yet. But he went on to say that, you know, when you watch him, nobody sees the game quite like LaMelo does. You can tell he sees it differently. He feels the game differently. And I think he's right about that. And it got me thinking, and I'll throw this out there to the listeners. Greatest rookies in sports history, 704-570-9610. Doesn't matter the sport, period. Not just football, basketball, baseball, but any rookie, any sport. Greatest rookies in sports history. The biggest rookie seasons, biggest rookie performances. You tell me the greatest rookies in sports history, 704-570-9610. Quickly, here's a bit more from George Karl yesterday, part of that great conversation, talking about the quality of games in the NBA this season.
I think the NBA is a little aware that at the end of the season, you get a lot of bad games. But this year, we've had a lot of blowouts all year long. I mean, the way that COVID has kind of controlled your roster a little bit and have a lot of games where guys aren't playing and with load management, we've had a lot of bad games. So I think we got to reevaluate.
There you go. So, I mean, really bad games at times this season. And that's what George Karl was saying yesterday. There have been some awful games. Now, a big part of that, and this extends, by the way, beyond the NBA. You know, even if you're not as in tune with the NBA, this year as maybe previous years for whatever reason, this is an issue not just in basketball, but in baseball as well. And I don't think we'll see it necessarily extend out into football because, you know, football, for the most part, was able to play a generally uninterrupted season last year during the COVID pandemic, right? The one thing we thought we knew last spring, when sports shut down and everything was uncertain, the one thing we thought we knew was that the NFL would march on and that college football, you know, would find a way to play its season because, well, money. Right. That was always the answer. I remember taking calls back in last April, last May. You know, people saying, KB, what do you think? We're going to have a season. Doesn't look good. You know, not sure how they can pull this off. The NFL, maybe. Those guys are pros. They've got the money to construct a bubble. They can do this, X, Y, Z. You know, but college football, not really sure, man. It's different. They're amateurs. You got the university element, so on and so forth. But at the end of all those conversations, you know, the answer was the same. Money. Of course, they're going to figure out a way to play. But in basketball and baseball, we are seeing a lot of injuries and a product that is, you know, feeling the brunt of those injuries. Now, in basketball, we've talked about it. You know, lots of players either out for long stretches of the season or done for the year. You know, we've talked about Jamal Murray and how much that was we thought was going to hurt the Denver Nuggets. Doesn't seem to have hurt them that badly. But there have been a ton of injuries across the NBA. And it's not just the injuries. It's the nagging. You know, game by game, you know, kind of wear and tear injuries that are leading to superstars taking those rest nights, the load management nights. And while I don't like load management, I do subscribe to the Michael Jordan theory of, you know, being a pro athlete. Not that I've ever had any experience being a pro athlete, but, you know, the MJ view of, hey, we get paid to play 82 games. I expect you to play 82 games. There are some modern players, by the way, who subscribe to that. You know, but this is a year where you could at least understand it a little bit with three or four games in a night, in a week and a compressed schedule. You know, I think they went from 120 days off during the season to 77. You know, that's a steep drop in terms of rest and days off and that sort of thing. The NBA has suffered with that. So has Major League Baseball, though, already this season. And the most recent being on Monday, the L.A. Dodgers announcing that Dustin May will undergo Tommy John surgery on his right elbow and be sidelined until the second half of the season. That was really bad news, you know, for that franchise, thinking that they might make a run to a second consecutive World Series title. But the truth is, May is just the latest in a line of guys dealing with injuries. There were more injuries to pitchers this April than in April 2019 and April 2018 combined. Now, of course, there was no baseball last April, but April 2019 and April 2018 combined, more injuries to pitchers in April of this year than the previous two Aprils of Major League Baseball combined. So while you can't blame simply this year's injuries on last year's shortened season, not that alone, you know, around Major League Baseball, there was serious concern about injuries entering 2021. So if you talk to anybody associated with the game on any level, they would express, you know, concern about pitchers specifically. Last year, Lance Lynn led all of baseball with 84 innings pitched. 84. Only three other pitchers topped 80 innings last season, and only 17 topped 70 innings. And this year, those pitchers are expected to work a full load of innings, sometimes more than 200. And that load might just be a little bit too much to handle. In the past 14 months, pitchers have had to get ready for the 2020 spring training, ramp it up to the season, shut it down, ramp up their throwing programs again, go into a 60-game season without a full spring training, relax in the offseason, ramp it up again, then go through a full spring training and start a new season on time. And some guys are going to handle that okay, but others clearly are not. And if you want to see a crazy rash of pitching injuries, you know, look no further than the San Diego Padres. Mike Clevinger, elbow injury that necessitated Tommy John surgery. Michael Baez, Adrian Morejon, Jacob Nix, Jose Castilla, they've all had it since March the 1st. You've got a handful of other guys going down with elbow and shoulder injuries. This is an issue. And coming off a year where we missed a lot of games and sports didn't play, it seems like those two sports, specifically baseball and basketball, are dealing with a rash of injuries, and I don't know that it should be that unexpected. Now, Billy DeMarlin is with us this week here for the remainder of the week. He's our on-site engineer here at Quail Hollow Club. And Billy, you're a big baseball fan. I got a couple things I got to ask you. First of all, though, that right there, Lance Lynn, 84 innings, led Major League Baseball last year in a shortened season. You had 17 guys top 70 innings. That was really about it. This year, most of those guys are going to be expected to go with a full innings load, anywhere between 175 to 200 innings in a lot of cases. I'm afraid we're going to see a ton of arm injuries this season.
Right. It's something that I actually hadn't even really considered before you brought this topic up, but you're absolutely right. Without those guys having that conditioning last year, and,
yeah,
you know, that really lightened load, I mean, those numbers are crazy. So one pitcher only broke 80 innings for the whole season, and that was what led me. So workloads are going to be a lot harder, and you're right, we've seen it with not just the Hornets but across the NBA, the way the pandemic affected scheduling and the workload now, and we're seeing it real early in baseball season. A lot of teams got the injury bug.
Well, and you know what, it's interesting too, because last week leading up to the draft, I was talking about comments made by Kevin Colbert, the GM of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he was talking about players who opted out of the 2020 college football season. And he said, look, all things being equal, he said, we won't completely pass on a guy just because they opted out last season. But all things being equal, if it's a decision between two players, one of which played last year, the other didn't, they'd likely opt for the guy who did play as opposed to the guy who didn't. And while I don't know that that's a strategy that works out long term, it does make some sense, you know, just in terms of concern over being away from a very violent collision sport for over a year. Now, some might say the body should be more rested, but apparently their belief is you stay away from the game for that long, you know, their concern is you might not be ready to play at a high level really soon. And maybe those guys deal with some injuries this fall, maybe not. Time's going to tell. Most of them were training for football-specific activities the entire time they were out getting ready for the draft and the combine, which they thought might happen. But those are still not football-specific movements. I don't know if the injury rash is going to be as bad in football, but it is something to watch based on what we're seeing in baseball and basketball right now.
Sure. Well, and the other thing, too, with the football thing is, you know, a guy like Gronk retires, comes back, right? Maybe a guy, a veteran like that, benefits more from the time off versus a college player making that developmental jump from pro, like you're saying. Maybe so. I can see why the the Steelers view it that way, but it does seem unfair to the player. I've seen it in baseball to bring it to my team. The Marlins, they have a second baseman prospect, Eason Diaz. He opted out, right?
Right.
And now the Marlins' starting day second baseman was Jazz Chisholm, right? He was out. He's out right now for injury, which is what we're talking about. But it almost seems as if Eason Diaz might have lost his opportunity to be the starting second baseman just because he made a decision about COVID, which is totally his prerogative, right?
Sure.
Like, I'm not going to hold it against any pro college player. If they didn't feel safe to play last year, that's their decision to make. But it does seem unfair that it might impact their professional futures.
Well, that makes sense. And we know the numbers, and I'm not getting into we've had enough COVID breakdown for a lifetime in the last year, but we know the numbers. We know these young athletes in peak physical condition are the least likely to die from COVID, least likely to even get suffer from symptoms of COVID. But I think we've seen too many guys in professional sports who have suffered not only symptoms but lasting symptoms to make you concerned. I mean, that was my first thought with Miles Bridges yesterday when he came down with health and safety protocols, aka COVID. Oh man, we saw what happened with Rudy Gobert. We saw what happened with Jason Tatum, a guy who, after he quote-unquote recovered, ended up still having to use an inhaler for the first time in his life.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Boston Red Sox pitcher, name escaping me, I believe Martinez, got COVID last year, dealt with some really tough consequences of that. I know there was a special not that long ago on some female soccer players, Olympic sports athletes, who'd had similar issues. So the point here being that coming off a COVID year, be it because an athlete contracted it or because they just didn't play, you're seeing an injury situation in the NBA and early in the baseball season, a mounting injury situation specific to pitchers as well. Could that be an issue for football? You hope not, because, again, they were able to pull off a full regular season last year, but it's still something to be considered, and especially for the guys who opted out of the 2020 season. Now, before we step aside, because I got Mike Maniscalco of the Hurricanes coming up here in about 10 minutes, how about Yankee Stadium last night? Not even the Star Wars thing. All right, not even the Star Wars thing. The fact that the Astros came to town last night on May the 4th, Star Wars-themed game, the Yankees nearly brought me to tears last night. And I know Astros fans hate it when I bring this up. It gets on their nerves. It's fine. But it's not just the Dodgers who are pissed at the Astros for that cheating campaign in 2017. It's the Yankees, too.
Yeah.
How about the Boo Birds last night in Yankee Stadium?
Yeah, it's almost like Yankees fans missed an entire year of getting to really voice their true opinions when the Astros came to town. It's like they unleashed a year of pent-up energy last night.
Right.
And, I mean, this. I'm not a Yankees guy. I am still a Giancarlo Stanton fan. And, that homer was a lot of what was going on last night. So I loved it for him. But yeah, Yankees fans, putting that kind of energy into a stadium, and it's not even at capacity because of that was crazy.
I was watching SVP Sports Center last night. I caught it last night. We were in studio for the Hornets pre and post game show, so that was our focus last night. But I got home and I was catching up on all the night's action. And I got to see it for the first time. And they did it in only a way that Yankees fans can do it. It was intense. It was vulgar. A lot of it's not suitable for the airwaves.
Right.
But, I mean, it was beautiful. Now, Bregman got some, some get back. He got his home run. But Altuve bore the brunt of that boo job yesterday. It was incredible. Anthony Pagnotta, you're a Mets fan. And I know you don't have any love for the Yankees. But even you had to at least be impressed by the boo job that the Yankees put on the Astros last night.
Oh, it was fantastic. That was one of the best things I've seen in baseball all year.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. 704-570-9610. Keep sending me the greatest rookies in sports history. I wanted to let some of those fill up. We'll come back to it here in about 30 minutes. Just with LaMelo's Rookie of the Year campaign in mind. The greatest rookie seasons in sports history. Not just the NBA, but Major League Baseball, NFL, NHL, whatever you got. Greatest rookie seasons. And we can include freshman seasons in that as well. You hit me up, 704-570-9610. And quickly, Texter says, KB, weren't pitchers being pulled a lot sooner now in baseball? I thought that was something you brought up in the past, how analytics say to pull the pitcher before facing a lineup the third time. Well, yeah, that's a little bit of a separate issue. But still, in a full Major League Baseball season, a member of the rotation, barring injury, is still going to be logging anywhere between 150 and 200 innings in a season. Last year, Lance Lynn led Major League Baseball with 84 innings pitched. Most of these guys haven't put in a full workload in 2 years. It's something to keep an eye on. Tommy John surgeries, are on the rise. More injuries in April of this year than the previous two Aprils combined in baseball. That's a problem. All right, we'll come back. are bouncing around today. Live from Quail Hollow, Wells Fargo Championship. It's Pro-Am Day. We'll keep you posted throughout the show. But when we come back, the red-hot Carolina Hurricanes win again last night. And we'll check in with the voice of the Canes, Mike Maniscalco, next here in the clubhouse, live from Quail Hollow on Sports Radio FNZ. What a beautiful day in Charlotte, North Carolina. Live from Quail Hollow, the Wells Fargo Championship 2021 returns. Much like many sporting events last year, there was no Wells Fargo Championship, but it's back this year, and we are live from Quail. Today, tomorrow, and Friday. Today's the Pro-Am. Tomorrow, the real thing gets underway. But today, Roy Williams, Mac Brown, it's Roy Williams Day here at Quail Hollow. He and Mac Brown paired with Gary Woodland and Will Zalatoris this morning. Bill Duvall as well. That I think that's the pairing, the grouping that has the biggest following out there on the course this morning. And hoping that at some point, defending Wells Fargo champion Max Homa can swing by the tent, maybe coming up during the lunch hour. We'll keep you abreast of all that happening. And later in the show, Chip Carey, the voice of the Atlanta Braves, back in the clubhouse. We'll talk about the Braves. Big night last night. A lot to get to with Chip. But right now, we talk to the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. Good friend of the show, Mike Maniscalco, is back with us on the Technicom hotline. Mike Maniscalco, how you doing this morning, buddy? Late night for you.
Oh, yeah. It's a great night, Kyle. Thank you. And I'm just a little upset that Quail Hollow didn't invite my partner Shane Willis out there for a little pro-am. I mean, I know that the pros don't want to be shown up, but for those of you who know Shane Willis, former 20-goal scorer for the Carolina Hurricanes his rookie year, I mean, the man just pipes drives 325. So I'm stumping for Shane to be part of the pro-am next year.
Oh, I love that. I love you said the word rookie right there. We're talking this morning in honor of LaMelo Ball's return to the floor in a big night last night against the Pistons. We're talking about the greatest rookie seasons in sports history. And that includes, encompasses basketball, football, baseball, hockey, you know, even golf. Greatest rookie season of all time. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot and say in all of sports history, but maybe the greatest rookie season in Carolina Hurricanes history. Mike, who would you give that honor to?
Greatest rookie season in Hurricanes history, I might have to give it to Jeff Skinner. Just how he burst on the scene, the goals that he scored. He set the rookie record for scoring. He makes the All-Star game. It was Skinner-Palooza all year long. Shane Willis is second on that list, for those of you who don't remember. NHL, I mean, if I go in the entirety of rookie seasons in the NHL, hard for me, and there might be recency bias, but Connor McDavid delivered the goods right away as soon as he stepped on the ice. But if I could go outside of other sports, Randy Moss had yep. one of the greatest rookie seasons in the history of any sport, if nobody has said number 84 for the Vikings at the time.
Oh, we got a few of those texts already this morning. I love that one. Let's get back to your team. Mike, five straight wins now. They beat the Blackhawks last night, 6-3, and they actually beat the Blackhawks back-to-back, and wins over the Blue Jackets, the Red Wings, and the Stars in that five-game stretch. Last time you and I talked a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about just how talented, how deep this team was, and you know it felt like they could only get better, and it seems like they are, Mike. I mean, five straight wins, have they hit another gear over these past week or over these past 2 weeks?
No, I don't think they've hit another gear. I think that they just consistently stay in the same gear, and they've gotten back Teuvo Teravainen, which that is a big addition to this team, just how good he is on both sides of the puck, offensively and defensively. He's brought more balance back for the Carolina Hurricanes, and you can see it with the game last night with Sebastian Aho and Andrei Svechnikov. That's the number one line when they are flying, and they are flying right now. But then that also brings more balance because Marty Natchez can play with Vincent Trocheck and, you know, Niederreiter. And then that will put Jesper Fast with Warren Fogle and the captain Jordan Staal, who's had an offensive renaissance this year. And then the energy line, the fourth line for the Canes, has been great as well. But, no, they haven't hit another gear. They have just been in this gear pretty much all year, Kyle. And I think that's why they're such a difficult opponent to play. And I think I've said it on your show and a few others. They don't change how they play. Their effort never changes. And they've had a few periods here and there that aren't great. You know, that nobody's going to play phenomenal for, you know, in this case, you know, 56 games this year. But the way that this team plays night in, night out, game in, game out, with their effort, they never wane off of the effort. And that's why they're leading the NHL in points right now.
So with three games left to go in the regular season, we know this team is leading its division right now, and I know some want to talk Stanley Cup, others, you know, maybe a little bit cautious to do so. But over these next three games, what's at stake, you know, both in terms of, you know, seeding, but also maybe a path to a run, to a Stanley Cup opportunity?
Well, the two things that are at stake are exactly what you just said. One is winning the Central Division, which is key because the way the playoffs are set this year, one plays four, two plays three in the division, and then it's a division playoff to get to what will be a Final Four that then will be based on points. So they'll reseed after the division playoff. So you want to be the number one team in the league. You want the President's Trophy. And, you know, everybody always asks me this one question. And in fact, in my talk show host days, Kyle, you know, you'd be like, well, who do you want to play? And the players are never going to tell you we want to play this or play that. I did have a coach one time tell me, I go, you know, who do you want to play in route to win a title? And he goes, give me the, you know, five or six easiest teams that I can possibly beat to win. And that's what you want. You want to match up against the teams that you are better than. So if you're the Canes, you want to play the four seed in the first round. You're going to get either Tampa or Florida in the second round, and that's going to be just a tremendous matchup. If people aren't hockey fans, watch the second round series if it happens to be Carolina and Tampa or Carolina and Florida. And you'll be a hockey fan after that. And then you want the lowest remaining seed in the semifinals to get to the Stanley Cup. So that's what's at stake in these last three games for the Canes.
Mike Maniscalco, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. He's with us on the Technicom hotline. Last time we spoke, you were talking a bit about the goaltending depth on this team, and I think we've seen that throughout the season. But and I do think I know the answer to this, but I'm curious. I know Peter Mrazek came back last night from injury. He's a name that probably the casual fans here in Charlotte might know better than anybody else. But, I mean, let's say hypothetical. Game 7, Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, Peter Mrazek's in the net, right? It's got to be him.
Well, I don't know. We got to see how the playoffs. We have to, honestly, Kyle, I wish I could give you a definitive answer. By the way, Charlotte, if you want to talk about Carolina Hurricanes goaltenders, I hope that you more than casually know Alex Nedeljkovic. I mean,
yes.
He won you guys a title down there. So that's a name that I look at. And the way that Nedeljkovic has played this year, it would be hard for me to say that it won't be him for Game 7. And you go back to the 2005-06 season when the Canes won the Stanley Cup. I think if heading into the playoffs you asked me that question in 2005-06, Kyle, everybody would have said, oh, it'll be Martin Gerber, who's the goaltender in Game 7, right? Well, it was Cam Ward. And in this situation here, and that was a rookie year for Cam, this situation here, you know, going to Game 7, Rod Brind'Amour and Schulte has shown us that he'll play the goaltender who he feels, A, deserves the chance to play, but, B, gives the team the best chance to win. So, I'm not saying it's a coin flip, but I don't think that it's absolutely 100% certain it's going to be one guy over the other if the Canes get to Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Does Rod Brind'Amour have any sort of advantage? I mean, look, there are some great coaches in the NHL, but, you know, Rod being a former player, he's not the only one. But, I mean, when you get into crunch time and you got a guy there on the bench who's been there, he's done it, he's seen it both from the bench and on the ice. Is there any advantage Rod Brind'Amour has over there when he's leading his team, you know, that he has over the opponent on a nightly basis that maybe we just don't see or think much about?
Yeah, you just touched on it because he has, I think, the best feel of any coach in the National Hockey League right now of who to send over the boards, how to put them over the boards, what to ask them to do when they get there, when to change up, when to match up, things that he's looking for. And it comes from his playing days. It also comes from how, you know, as a assistant coach, he was just a sponge watching things of what to do, how to coach, how to get better. Yeah, he has that advantage, I think, over everyone. He won't admit it. There are some great coaches in the league. I mean, the guy down in Florida, Joel Quenneville, he's got a couple of Stanley Cup rings, three of them. That's a guy who knows how to match up. And, you know, while his playing days are from the 80s, he's a guy who knows how to, you know, get what he wants out of his players and matchups. But just the feel and the read that Rod Brind'Amour has when it's time to send a guy over the boards, when it's time to make a change or tell the guys how to keep the shifts at a certain length. And that's something that can't be taught. You have to have it in you. And know the flow of the game, and that's going to be a huge advantage for the playoffs. And now that he's got two postseasons under his belt, he's absolutely going to be ready for this run here because he knows he's got a special piece.
You know, Mike, before I let you go, being here, and you know this as well as anybody, being here and having to cover both the Panthers and the Hornets on a pretty much full-time basis, it's hard to keep up with another team as much as we keep up with the two here in the Queen City. But, you know, I love talking to you about this team, and I've learned a ton about the game and the league and, of course, the Hurricanes. But the injury situation in your league is what I'm curious about, because we were just talking about the NBA, the rash of injuries across the league. It's been brutal in the NBA, especially the last several weeks. And we just saw the month of April rack up more pitcher injuries in Major League Baseball than the previous two Aprils combined. And a lot of this is situated on the pandemic, not playing last year, altered schedules. Is the NHL experiencing anything similar this year? What's the injury situation been like, and is it concerning?
Oh, yeah, it's been a war of attrition this year. And, you know, if you think about it, I don't think it's surprising. It was a compacted 56-game schedule, and you had players where if a COVID situation hit, a COVID protocol situation hit, you don't practice for, you know, 10 to 14 days, and then you get thrown into a game. And, you know, athletes can tell you they need to be regimented. They can ride a bike. They can train at home as much as they can. It's not the same as playing. So, yeah, there has been a rash of injuries this year, you know, from soft tissue injuries to major injuries that have hit. But I think it was expected. And, yes, the Canes have been bitten by the injury bug this year, but I have to give high marks to their strength and conditioning coach, Bill Burniston, and their head trainer, Doug Bennett, for working in concert, not just with the players, but with the coaching staff to say, you know, when to back off the guys for a practice day, or when to push, or when to go from there. And it's something that we've seen in the NHL. And coming down the stretch, I think a lot of teams, when they knew they were out of the race, some guys were allowed to pull the chute and just say, look, you know, we're not going to the playoffs, so let's just call it the rest of the season and get ready for next year when things become normal. But I think it was to be expected. I think we'll see it in football. We saw it in football last year with what happened with injuries and guys trying to play through it. But I wouldn't say that it was an epidemic this year for the NHL. But, yeah, you saw a lot of injuries because there just was no time to recover. There was no space in between games. And you know, these are tough guys. And a lot of guys, I can promise you right now, Kyle, are playing through a ton of stuff. And now the playoffs are coming up, and they'll continue to play through it. But would I say it's more than a normal year? Yeah, if you look at the volume of it. But I think it was also to be expected. This is a collision sport, and there have been some big collisions this year. But I just think that the league and the teams did the best they possibly could with the cards they were dealt.
Love it. Mike Maniscalco, you truly are one of the best, buddy. We had you on in the studio last night during Hornets pre and post. You're great at what you do. We appreciate your time, man. We'll talk soon.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad that $5 went a long way with you, Kyle. I appreciate it. And if they get you out on the greens there at Quail Hollow, remember, no, wear the soft spikes. Just wear the soft spikes. It'll do you well.
Mike, I wouldn't sully this beautiful course with my game. Just wouldn't do it. Thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, buddy. Take care.
Mike Maniscalco, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, with us on the Technicom Hotline. We are live from Quail Hollow Club. The Wells Fargo Championship returns to the Queen City. After a year off, they're back, and it is a beautiful sight. If you're out here thinking about coming out here, or will be later this week, maybe even this afternoon, we are stationed right behind the driving range over here near the concession stand because, well, of course, we are. We're radio guys. But we got a lot of foot traffic. Great seeing folks out today. Come on by, wave, say what's up. We've talked to some listeners this morning. Again, just love seeing everybody out here. When we come back, the greatest rookies in sports history. We'll touch on that. Great submissions coming in on the text line. I want to talk about that for a few minutes. A lot of great stuff to get into. Live from Quail Hollow, you're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ. Big thanks to Mike Maniscalco, voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, for joining us this morning. It was a missed opportunity by me, though, and I texted him during the break. And I said, man, I should have asked you about Tom Wilson. Missed opportunity on that for me. And Maniscalco texts back to say, I thought you were going there with the last question. I was ready to go off on that. And he says, let me know anytime you need me. So maybe next time we get him on, hopefully soon, we'll talk about that. As not a big hockey fan, and I say that as someone who, again, you know, dove into the sport 2 years ago during the Canes run, absolutely a bandwagon fan. Don't run from it. Don't lie about it. I was a bandwagon fan 2 years ago. I more or less stayed on the bandwagon since then, but you know, I'm a guy who's learned about hockey for 2 years, not somebody who you'd look to as an authority on the game of hockey. But Anthony Pagnotta may have a take on this. I don't know if – are you a Rangers fan or an Islanders fan? I can't even remember.
a Rangers fan. Come on,
okay.
KB.
Okay, so I guess that then means what? How do you feel about the hit that Tom Wilson laid?
He's a dirty player. I mean, let's just be really honest here. I cut myself back there because I was going to say something that I would regret.
I heard that coming.
I can't stand him. And it's not just from, you know, the issue with the Rangers the other night. This has been a problem for him for a very, very long time. And there's a difference between being a player that is classified as a grinder, even a goon. There were guys back in the days that literally they were there for one reason, and that was to fight. But Tom Wilson is a guy that repeatedly has, you know, been a problem for the league. He takes cheap shots at guys. He does stuff that he knows is illegal, and all you're going to do is fine him. I mean, he took out Artemi Panarin is done for the season.
Because that was a filthy, dirty shot. I'm watching it again right now. I mean, just a filthy, dirty shot.
And they he has gotten away with so many different things like this. I mean, this is nowhere near the first time that it's been even this egregious. And it's just, at some point, you've got to put your foot down with a guy like this. And you wonder, you know, if he played for a different team, a team that wasn't seen as one of the media darlings of the NHL, if he would be a guy that would be punished a bit more harshly. I think it's ridiculous.
And I bring it up, too, not because it's big headline news here in Charlotte, North Carolina, but because, again, I was hoping to get into that with Maniscalco. We just got carried away on the Hurricanes, but if you haven't seen it, I mean, it's worth Googling. Tom Wilson, you know, player for the Washington Capitals, a dirty, filthy shot, as Pagnotta just said, on Artemi Panarin, and I just can't believe they didn't suspend that guy. In fact, the Rangers released just a scathing statement, basically saying that the gentleman in charge of rules and punishments for the NHL was unfit to continue in his job because he opted not to suspend Tom Wilson for that sucker punch. It was wow. Texter's writing in, by the way. I'm surprised that people are jumping in on this. Texter says, Wilson is fine, whatever. If you're going to be about that, then you got to be about the Crosby hit yesterday. Somebody else saying, Tom Wilson is the man. Don't start none, won't be none. So, look, I'm not, again, I don't
know. Nobody
have
started anything. He literally took the guy, threw him to the ground.
Was there a dust-up earlier in the game? Was there a confrontation that might have led to it?
So there was a scramble in front of the net. Pavel Buchnevich, who's another winger for the Rangers, is down on the ice, and he pretty much just starts cross-checking, punching him in the back of the head. So what do you expect Panarin to do? People are saying, well, you shouldn't start with him. Well, he is illegally cross-checking and punching a guy to the back of the head. You are going to stand up for your teammate.
Like, it was the definition of a sucker punch.
It's unbelievable. And people are like, that texter right there basically just said it. Well, he asked for it. No, he didn't. Tom Wilson asked for a fisticuffs. But here's the thing. You don't take someone and throw them down on their head. And this is not the first time that he has done this to, I mean, I don't remember. Was it Svechnikov? I think he's done this before to a Hurricanes player.
Oh, well, I mean, that much I did learn, that Tom Wilson obviously has had a lot of run-ins with players across the league. Just in watching the video, you know, in terms of not knowing exactly what preceded it, what might have been said, just seeing the highlight, it looks clearly like a sucker punch to me. But, you know, people chiming in. So you tell us, 704-570-9610. I'm learning so much hockey from Pagnotta this morning. I love it. Hit us up, 704-570-9610. A lot of you already have been. Talking about the greatest rookies and rookie seasons in sports history. And, of course, we got on that this morning because of LaMelo Ball, his third game back from injury last night, 23 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, or excuse me, I think 7 rebounds, 6 assists in the win over Detroit. And LaMelo, you know, after not shooting it super well for the first two games back, shot it pretty well last night, 7 of 16, hit a couple of threes, and then also hit some huge clutch free throws at the end of the game to seal it. 102-99, Hornets get the win. And right now, this morning, I heard Mack and Bone saying, he better win Rookie of the Year. He better be the Rookie of the Year in the NBA. And while I've certainly been yelling that at times for the past several weeks, the truth is it seems like right now that will be the case. Now, they're just betting odds, but, you know, betting odds are important because Vegas and odds makers, the good ones anyway, make a lot of money. So they're more often right than wrong. LaMelo is the betting favorite this morning to win the NBA Rookie of the Year. And so the greatest rookie seasons in sports history, I got a bunch of these coming in. Before I get to those, a couple that stood out to me as the greatest rookie seasons in sports history. Albert Pujols, infielder, St. Louis Cardinals, 2001, spring training, Mark McGwire in his final season told Tony La Russa, if you don't put this guy on the roster for the 01 season, it might be one of the worst moves you make in your career, end quote. And, of course, he was referring to a talented youngster by the name of Albert Pujols, eventually dubbed Big Al. Well, you know, 475 home runs and 2,200 hits later, seems like Mark McGwire was probably right about that. Other greatest rookie seasons in sports history, greatest rookies of all time. Larry Bird, man, the hick from French Lick. That guy, his rookie season, 61 wins in his rookie year for the Celtics, 32 more than the previous season, by the way, and an Eastern Conference Finals appearance that kind of woke up the basketball world to this shaggy-haired kid from Indiana. And, you know, three championships later, Larry Bird's dominance is still felt to this day in the NBA. Ted Williams, incredible rookie season all the way back in 1939. And he was a pioneer in the art of hitting. Short, clean stroke. Hall of Famer didn't hit the ball necessarily, but he swung cleanly right through it. His rookie year, fantastic. Hit 327, 436 slugging. On base, I should say, 609 slugging, 31 home runs. Ted Williams in 1939 was a monster in his rookie season. Joe DiMaggio, 36. Monstrous rookie year for Joe DiMaggio. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I love going down the annals of history here. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's rookie year in Milwaukee. 28 points, 15 rebounds, 4 assists per game, shot 52% from the floor. I mean, just a legendary rookie year for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And then a guy like Mike Trout back in 2012. Rookie year and just a meteoric rise from the very beginning. He was, you know, basically, you know, if you'll recall, Tim Salmon was the big name in the Angels outfield when he got there. But quickly, Mike Trout replaced him in those conversations as he was called up in late April to replace Bobby Abreu, who was hitting 208 and never really looked back and had a monstrous rookie season, hit 326, 30 home runs, 83 runs driven in, 27 doubles, 15 triples, 49 steals. Mike Trout's rookie season, one of the greatest in sports history. Got a bunch of yours coming in here. Somebody sang Michael Jordan's rookie season. Others sang Mark McGwire as well. Adrian Peterson has come in on the text line as having the best rookie season, according to this particular listener. And then somebody else, Adrian Peterson, best freshman is AP. Dude was crazy at Oklahoma, then got hurt. Rookie, probably Doc K or Daryl Strawberry. Like all those, really good stuff. Somebody sang The Laser Show, Dustin Pedroia's rookie year, 2007, rookie of the year, World Series champion, hard to beat that. That's from Rob. And then, of course, we got the texters writing in that Cam Newton has to be included as one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time. And, you know, Cam's rookie season was obviously incredible. You know, won the rookie of the year in the NFL and threw for, what, over 400 yards in his debut as a rookie. Cam Newton's rookie season was obviously fantastic. I don't know that his ranks up there obviously here. I don't know how often that would be mentioned if you asked a wider national audience, but his certainly should come up because Cam Newton's rookie season was incredible. 704-570-9610. Love these. We're going way back in history with some of these. Fernando Valenzuela was sent in by a texter not that long ago. Fernando Valenzuela was sent in. His rookie season under Tommy Lasorda was truly one of the greatest of all time. And, of course, Valenzuela went on to have a fantastic career. And then, just like Mike Maniscalco said in his interview, he thought of Randy Moss immediately as having one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time. So I think Randy Moss, again, his rookie campaign was obviously special. And I got too many of these to keep up with right now, but his was pretty incredible. And I like this one, too. Eric Dickerson has come in from some listeners on a couple of occasions here in the last hour. Eric Dickerson, rookie season, made just a thoroughbred of a running back out of SMU. 6'3", 220 pounds. I mean, just spilling over with talent. And that guy, you know, made carrying the football a true art when he first came out and throughout the peak years of his career. Number two overall pick. And that guy in a rookie season, 1,808 yards, 18 touchdowns on the ground, 51 receptions for 400 yards, and another two touchdowns through the air. Eric Dickerson still in 1983 as a rookie, and really I think his entire career is too often overlooked, but that rookie season was something special. Here's a bit of an unorthodox rookie season that I still don't think gets enough credit historically. Ichiro Suzuki, back in 2001, after 9 seasons in the Japanese leagues, you know, Ichiro finally made it over to Major League Baseball and immediately infused MLB with, you know, a dominance that we really hadn't seen before just in the way that it was done. Cannon for a right arm, had a as high a motor as you're going to find. And in 2001, rookie record 242 hits, league high batting average of 350, and 56 steals. I mean, just an unholy number, 56 steals for Ichiro Suzuki in his rookie season with the Seattle Mariners after spending 9 years in the Japanese leagues. Won both Rookie of the Year and MVP honors, by the way, as a result, becoming the epitome of a perfect contact hitter. You know, he changed the game in a lot of ways. And there was a recent video of Ichiro Suzuki, and I'm going to try to pull that up during the break. You know, he's far beyond the point where any sort of, you know, comeback would ever be seriously considered. But for a guy his age working out, I do still think he's trying to play some professional baseball somewhere on the globe because he's still in incredible shape. So Ichiro's rookie season was fantastic. I love those texts. And for those of you who sent that in, that's great. That's a wonderful pull because you could make the argument that his was the single greatest rookie season of all time when you factor in everything that occurred. Again, 9 seasons in Japan before ever making it over to America, and then in his rookie season winning both Rookie of the Year and the MVP honors as a result. His was incredible. What else do we have? Oscar Robertson. How could we forget the Big O in the greatest rookie seasons of all time? 30.5 points, 10 rebounds, and 9.7 assists per game. I mean, 0.3 of an assist shy per game of averaging a triple-double in his rookie year in the NBA. He helped those Royals improve from 19-56 the year before to 33-46 in his rookie season, and then after nearly averaging that triple-double, achieved the impossible, if you will, in his second year with averages of 30.8, 12.5 rebounds, and 11.4 assists. And, you know, Russell Westbrook is breathing down his neck right now for the all-time triple-double number. But Big O, that guy's rookie season was as great as it gets, except for maybe this one. As we step aside here, Rookie of the Year in 1959-60, Wilt Chamberlain, 37.5 points, 27 rebounds per game. Yes, you are hearing that correctly. 37.6 points, 27 rebounds per game, and a cool 46% from the field. Rookie of the Year, first team All-NBA, most valuable player. They couldn't have scripted a more perfect rookie season for Wilt Chamberlain back in 1959-60. Just one of the most special. He's one of those athletes, Wilt Chamberlain. And I'm sure y'all could come up with some more. But Wilt is one of those athletes from a previous generation that I think most of us, even, you know, if you're like me and are still way too young to have watched Wilt, I think if you know anything about Wilt Chamberlain's career and his athletic makeup, Wilt's a guy that you look at and say, yeah, he absolutely could have been a star in maybe today's NBA, certainly the 90s NBA, you know, when the big man still mattered, when post play, traditional post play still really mattered in the NBA. Wilt Chamberlain could have been special. And by the way, Rick Bunnell, Charlotte Observer, chiming in just a little while ago with his, saying that John McEnroe getting to the Wimbledon semifinals before his freshman season at Stanford, that is rookie excellence. That's a good one, Rick. I appreciate that. 704-570-9610. Lunch hour coming up. It's flying by here on a Wednesday, live from Quail Hollow. You're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.